Oh, listeners, you're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we're talking today to Matt Welsh, otherwise known as the Vagabond Chef, for a number of reasons, including the fact that he used to be, I don't know how vagabond you are now, Matt Welsh, but you used to be a vagabond, touring the world on your motorcycle. By the way, you have great tats. I looked at the picture. Anyhow, you named your restaurant in Wheeling, West Virginia, the Vagabond Kitchen, which is great. Tell me how that relates to your food, your cuisine, style of modern Appalachian and contemporary American.
Yeah, I'm not nearly as much of a vagabond these days as I used to be. I'm an old father now. I have two youngsters running around, so I travel a little bit less, but I still get out on the road and stretch my legs, travel around the state as the executive chef for West Virginia State Parks. There's so many nooks and crannies and hollers and hills to explore in West Virginia and to continue to grow my kind of sense of our culinary anthropology that I always take, advantage to go ahead and do that. And the food that we have been serving at Vagabond Kitchen has definitely evolved over time. In the beginning, I had a little bit more of a world fusion vibe going on, but as I spent more time back home again in West Virginia, I realized that I really wanted to explore more of what makes our food Appalachian and work on bringing it into the modern day and make it interesting for folks.
There's so much I want to talk to you about. That's one of the things high on my list. But you kind of slid over this other thing I wanted to mention. You are the chef for the national parks in West Virginia.
Yes, for the state parks in West Virginia, I am.
Yeah. And what does that involve?
Well, it's a consulting advisory position. So we have 36 parks in the state, and I have the opportunity to work with the 13 or 14 of those that have food and beverage programs. I do training with them. I help them come up with our menus, and we do some special events. Like we have a farm-to-table dinner series in the fall. And I actually started the cellar-to-table dinner series last late winter, early spring, and that celebrates the type of food that we would put up in our root cellars. So it's shelf-stable food, but still locally made.
Right. I mean, that's one of the characteristics. I love West Virginia, by the way. Just give me a chance, and I'll break out into country roads.
I've sang country roads everywhere I've traveled. Every country, every place in the world, they all know that song.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I used to do it on the guitar. You know, I mean, I was a real pop.
And did it, but sometimes the rendition was short. but she did win a Swiss Army knife in a tennis tournament at the Greenbrier.
Oh, yeah. I did that.
Oh, wow.
I did country roads.
That's great.
Oh, yeah. We love that. The whole thing of the Greenbrier, what it represents, liquid sunshine, the whole thing. I was really into that. So, but
anyhow, that's great.
In fact, I was just talking to a student the other day who's studying in Pittsburgh at Chatham University. She's going to be an occupational therapist, but then she's going to go back to Charleston to practice.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and we talked about the attraction of West Virginia. I mean, it's major. There's so much stuff nobody knows is going on. But I guess what we're talking about now is actually the cuisine. I'll tell you one more side thing here is I was asked to judge a food contest in Wheeling, and I can't remember the name of the contest. But it had all those funny foods on it that I was supposed to be judging, the most outstanding of which was called roadkill.
Ah, That's funny.
Which had very specific rules and regulations.
Yeah,
I
bet it did.
I was afraid of that one. I was afraid I couldn't meet the moment in roadkill. But okay, so we're going back to, I mean, my perception of the whole of West Virginia, I mean, maybe I'm a little biased because I'm married to an Englishman, but I think that the Elizabethan settlers had a lot to do with the development of the state, right?
They did, and they're definitely the cornerstone of what folks would identify the most easily as Appalachian cuisine. I try to stretch a little earlier and also more modern when I'm developing my cuisine. So I look all the way back to the indigenous people of the Ohio River Valley. And then in modern days, you know, really all bets are off. We have people living from all over the world here now. So I think it's a matter of utilizing regional ingredients and, you know, you can do just about anything.
Right. Now, okay. Now, about the, I mean, like, did you mingled it up with other cuisines. And when I'm reading about the influences on Appalachian cuisine, it mentions some other things. I mean, one of them was a Cherokee for Native American.
Mm-hmm.
What was the tribe?
We've had several tribes through here, and I can't remember them all off the top of my head. I think, but we've had several tribes move through the area, including some mound builders. Wheeling is about 20 minutes away from Moundsville,
right,
which has a great great large funeral mound as part of it. It's a town.
Yeah, and nobody knows quite anything really about us at that.
Right, because it was all oral history.
Yeah, and then you had of course the English, you
mm-hmm.
had German, and you had Italian too. I mean,
oh yeah, lots of Italian and Scots Irish.
The basics here, and Irish,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a lot of Irish actually. And so,
mm-hmm.
how would you define, to start with, just define what is Appalachian cooking?
I think it's like I said, it all comes down to the ingredients, really. So it's food made with what you can forage, grow, or hunt in these hills. A lot of our cuisine was defined by the limitations of travel. So, you know, a lot like for instance, a quintessential Appalachian dish is vinegar pie, and vinegar pie was made because there was no citrus. You know, so vinegar pie is a very custardy pie. It, when it goes into the oven, it's almost a straight liquid, but it comes out this delicious, custardy, almost citrusy flavor. And that was a necessity. Soup beans are another necessity food. That was an opportunity to take dried beans and infuse them with all this flavor from a ham hock. So a lot of our cornerstone cuisine has been developed out of adversity.
Uh-huh. You had a lot of game, so that's part of the cuisine too?
I would say so, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to work with game in a professional setting because it's so expensive, and it's hard to find it. Obviously, you know, I can't just go out in my backyard and shoot a deer and take it to the restaurant. So, you know, farm deer is very expensive. And then, you know, we're always trying to serve two masters, because we want our locals, our neighbors, to eat with us, but also we want to reach out into the larger demographic of the region and even the country. So local folks aren't going to tend to want to pay $60 or $80 for a venison steak because they probably have some in their freezer at home. But it is something
that
I'm really interested in working with.
Yeah, I have to tell you that, I mean, I grew up with a family of hunters, and that, I mean, it was nothing to have the deer hanging in the basement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to buy a venison steak, I almost choked to death on the price.
mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
the same thing with something like ramps. You know, we come home with bushel bags of ramps in the spring, but they're $20 a pound or more, depending on where you're at.
Yeah, I know. Well, you have a RAM festival that I used to go to.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We have a lot of really wonderful regional food festivals across the state.
Yeah, tell us about some of them, because I remember going there a lot.
Well, buckwheat's another one. We have the Buckwheat Festival in Preston County, and I would say that is a quintessential Appalachian ingredient as well. There's a strawberry festival. Gosh, I don't even know. There's so many. You know, we have a lot of ethnic food festivals as well here in Wheeling. We have the Italian festival. We have the Greek festival. There's a large Lebanese population, too, so you get great pierogies from the Lebanese church. And all of those are just little pieces of people's culture that I think it's really important that we continue to celebrate.
Right. Is Appalachian cooking getting – I mean, it's kind of a subset of Southern cooking, right?
Well, I think that there are – there a lot of times it gets lumped in with Southern, and there are definitely Southern influences, but Appalachia stretches all the way up into New England, so there's a lot of opportunity to reach outside of the South as well. For instance, I like to make Syracuse salt potatoes, which comes from the salt mines in Syracuse, New York, where the Irish immigrants would take new potatoes and cook them in the salt brines at work, and they come up with these really delicious, salty, crusty potatoes when they're done.
I remember my father on one of his visits to this region of the country, and he loved the salts. I mean, he just fell in love with them when they hit the plate, and he couldn't get more. No matter how hard we tried to say, but you have other foods you have to put around here. Don't you realize that?
Yeah. We actually have our own salt works here in West Virginia as well. There's an ancient ocean under the mountains called the Iapetus, and J.Q. Dickinson Salt Works in south of Charleston, West Virginia, they mine that salt brine, and we have our own salt.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Now, I mean, I remember, I think I had a water contest. Was it water? Tell me about your water.
Well, we have a lot of limestone, which is a wonderful filter for water. And there's actually a distillery in Charleston, West Virginia called Bullock, Bullock. And they have karst limestone water for all of their alcohol that they distill. It comes out of West Virginia. They use West Virginia corn to make it. And it's some top-tier stuff. It's really delicious. A great, great product to work with. We serve it at the restaurant. And sometimes I'll cook with it, too.
Huh. Yeah. The more I think about it, the more there is going on and the more to love about West Virginia. It's amazing.
I agree. I'm still finding new things out every day, and I grew up here. I've lived here now for 12 years since I moved home. And in that 12 years, I've been deeply diving into West Virginia, you know, specifically with the food and drink, and I'm still learning things every single day.
Right. Like everything seeming to evolve in the food world, is it all going to end up mishmashed in and the characteristics that make it what it's regional are going to be lost like a lot of other cuisines have had happen?
I think we'll see that some, you know, as things evolve, you know, things will change. Things are changing. And that's, I think that's important because that the things that are alive when they evolve and when they grow and when they develop. And we don't want this to die. We don't want our culture to end. So, you know, I think someone that was really into it could probably say, oh, that recipe is, you know, comes from this immigrant. It was developed at this time period. And that's all well and good. But the fact that it's still changing and getting on people's plates in front of them today, I think is even more important.
Yeah. Now, I mean, apparently you as a spokesperson and your restaurant and all the presentations you do. You were an important part of the development of Charleston, the redevelopment of Wheeling, right?
I mean, I would like to think so. I chose to open my restaurant in downtown almost 12 years ago, and you know, we've been really kind of trying to sound the trumpets for folks to come in and be part of the downtown scene. More restaurants have opened up since then. Of course, I wasn't the first restaurant to open or anything like that. But I'm a strong voice in a choir of folks that are doing really, really good things to revitalize the heart of Wheeling.
Yeah, I mean, almost everything I read points out your contributions.
Oh, well, that's wonderful to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. And then we went through this a bit with them. What's his name, Senator?
Senator Byrd.
Oh, yeah, Senator Byrd, when he was trying to set up the high-tech corridor.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? Did it ever happen, Rabbit? I don't know.
It didn't grow like he hoped it would.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's for sure. But he did also help us with a variety of things when we needed help.
Your passport.
We needed a passport in less than 24 hours.
Okay.
And his office took care of that. He was just a marvelous old geezer, I don't know what to call him.
Well, I don't know if he'd like to be known as that, but we are.
But yeah, he was a wonderful champion for our state and did a lot of great things for West Virginia.
Yeah. Now, I mean, are there still authentic Mountaineers and so forth around?
Are there authentic Mountaineers? I mean, I would say so. I think, you know, like all things, they have developed over time. But I think what kind of defines a Mountaineer is a certain level of self-sufficiency and, you know, stick-to-itiveness, grit, that sort of thing. And those characteristics are definitely still represented throughout the state. We do struggle with convenience culture, you know. Dollar General is now the number one place for West Virginians to get their food, which is heartbreaking. I'm sorry?
Well, I mean, how much farming do you have?
I think we have a fair amount of farming, but I think we've kind of lost the middle-scale producers. We have some bigger farms, and we have some smaller farms, but where it used to be, there were a lot of people that farming was maybe not their full-time job, but it was definitely something that was helping to fund the family. You know, now it tends to either be a full-time job or it's kind of more of a hobby. I think, and that's anecdotally, I don't know that for a fact, but that's what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
There are fewer people who are devoting their entire lives to farming unless they have a really large operation.
Yeah, well, I mean, apparently there'll be a big kick up for mining with the current administration trying to revive that, huh?
Yeah, that's hard to tell, too.
Hello, is that dead silence I hear on the other end of the line? I'm sorry, it was just an observation.
Yeah, you know, our extractive industries have always been a large part of people putting food on the table here in the state, and it's unfortunate because most of those industries make the money off of things, you know, non-renewable resources in our state, and then that money goes outside of our state. So it's not been the greatest relationship, but for a lot of families, it's all they've known. Mm-hmm. Currently, I don't see a whole lot of coal mining. I know we just had a coal mining accident. We lost someone in one of the mines recently, just a couple weeks back. And the fracking industry seems to have really cut back in the past 5 or 6 years as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you talk about foraging. I'm a cheerleader for foraging and for mushrooms. Mm-hmm. I just read an article, I think it was New York Times, about in California. They just had all these people die from eating this one mushroom that looks a lot like a perfectly good mushroom, except it's poisonous. I forget what it's called, you know?
Yeah, you got to be really careful.
Yeah, I know. So what do you do? I'm just curious, if you have a lot of foragers that come to your back door at your restaurant, what do you do if they're bringing mushrooms?
Mushrooms I can't touch. I just stay away from them. Other things like ramps and other vegetables are fair game, but all meat has to be processed either within the state or federally if it's going to cross the state lines, and that happens a lot living in the northern panhandle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't mess around. There's a lot of things that I would eat on my own that I would absolutely never serve in the restaurant.
Uh-huh. I see. Do you have trouble getting people to work in the restaurant?
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere. It's across all industries right now, across the country. It's just a real lack of employable staff. It's an unfortunately tough time to do business.
Yeah, I keep wanting to know what all these people, how they pay for everything that they need when they don't want to work. I mean, I don't understand it. I'd like to know the secret.
It's exactly what I say. I would love to know how they're doing it, because I sure as heck can't.
Yeah. Now, can wrapping up a little bit, do you have maybe one dish or two dishes that would be really typical of Appalachian cuisine?
Well, my favorite Appalachian dish is soup beans. I just absolutely love them. I love how they work. You know, that there's so much flavor to them, and I think part of what really defines Appalachian cuisine as well is simplicity. Like, there's not a whole lot going into it, but it's done well. It takes time, and you know, at the end of that pot of soup beans is so silky and delicious and full of flavor, and it just warms you from the inside out. It's a wonderful thing. The other one
What is it again?
Soup beans, which I always say soup beans are not bean soup. So in my opinion, soup beans need to be very thick, like baked, like a good baked bean. Not those English baked beans. No offense, sir.
What goes into them?
So my soup beans, I would start off with onions and a little bit of garlic. Sweat those off in a Dutch oven, maybe cook them in some bacon fat. And then you would add the beans. Now, I like to use canned beans. That's a little non-traditional, but I keep the bean liquor in there because that has all that flavor in it. Traditionally, it would be a brown dry bean, but I use white northern canned. And then you add a ham hock, and the beans soak all the wonderful flavor out of that ham hock. Now, I also like to put in chunked ham that I'll render down until all the water's cooked out of it. Sometimes I'll use bacon in there as well, just to put more pork flavor into it. And then you just cook it down, and it thickens up and gets real nice and silky and delicious.
Well, that sounds great. It's also protein. That's good. Do you have one more thing?
Yeah, stack cake. That's a lot of times that's associated with Tennessee, but that's an Appalachian staple. And what a stack cake is, it looks like a stack of flapjacks, of thin flapjacks, but each layer starts out as almost like a sugar cookie. You bake them in the oven, and they come out very crisp. But in between each layer, you put stewed dry apples, or it can be applesauce or apple butter, and then you wrap it up and refrigerate it overnight. And overnight, the moisture from your filling is extracted into each of those cookie-like layers, and it turns into this beautiful, dense, delicious cake.
It sounds fabulous. We'll be there.
It's really tasty. Oh, well, and there's a great story behind it, too, because supposedly back in the hard times, when folks couldn't afford to make an entire cake themselves, everyone in the family or everyone in the community would show up with one cookie, one layer, and then they'd put it all together, and together they made the cake.
That's great. You've got a lot of heart where you are. I mean, that's something
Yes.
I always felt about West Virginia. So, anyhow, but listeners, this sounds like an easy trip to get there. Do you have a website, Matt?
We do. It's www.thevagabondkitchen.com.
Okay, thevagabondkitchen.com. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Matt, well, the big vagabond person, and if you want to know about Appalachian cooking, you also are available for speaking, are you?
I am, sure, yeah.
Yeah, great. And they'll reach
yeah.
you through your website, right?
Yes, they can.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It makes me want to sing Country Roads.
Do you want to?
No.
We can sing it right now.
Idea. You have no idea how bad my voice is.
You don't have to have a good voice to sing Country Roads. You just have to have that heart you were talking about.
Well, it was great meeting you, Matt. And
thank you.
Continued success. Thank you.
It was wonderful speaking with you both as well. Have a wonderful day, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.